That'll be us.
Hello, George. How are you?
Wonderful seeing you again. Really wonderful. Well, this is splendid. Superb.
Well, I tried to create a pleasant atmosphere in which to work.
Well, you succeeded marvelously. I wish I had your taste in carpets.
And pictures.
Hey, you're much too kind, George.
Much too kind. Well, sit down, George.
Thank you.
I really haven't done very much. The place is much the same as it was when I moved in.
Paul, I've come to see you about something big. It's top secret. It must go no further than your chief of staff and not to him. Unless you can trust his discretion.
Of course.
A group of armies is forming on this front for an offensive very soon. Headquarters is determined to make a complete breakthrough. Why are you smiling?
I'm really sorry. I thought for just a moment I knew what you were going to say. Please go on.
I never knew you were a mind reader. What did you think I was about to say?
Something about the anthill.
You are a mind reader.
Well, it is a key position. It's in my sector. To be perfectly honest, I've heard some talk. You know, there's nothing really secret around headquarters.
Well, what do you think?
Well, it's the key to the whole German position in this sector. They've held on to it for a year now, and it looks as though they'll hold on to it for another year if they want to.
Paul, I have formal orders to take the anthill no later than the 10th, that's the day after tomorrow.
That comes pretty close to being ridiculous, don't you think?
I don't imagine I'd be here if I really thought that. Paul, if there's one man in this army who can do this for me, it's you.
It's out of the question, George. Absolutely out of the question. My division was cut to pieces. What's left if it is in no position to even hold the anthill, let alone take it? I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
Well, Paul, there was something else I wanted to tell you. However, I'm sure that you'll misunderstand my motives in mentioning it.
What was it?
Oh, you'll be bound to misunderstand. However, as your friend, maybe I should tell you.
What are you trying to say, George?
Paul, the talk around headquarters is that you are being considered for the 12th Corps.
The 12th Corps?
Yes, and without another star. Now I've pushed it all I can. 12th Corps needs a fighting general, and you're overdue in that star. We both know that your record is good enough for you to refuse this assignment on the grounds you've stated. No one would question your opinion. It's simply get someone else to do the job. So, you shouldn't let this influence your opinion, Paul.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have a cognac?
No, thanks, Paul. Not before dinner.
George, I'm responsible for the lives of 8,000 men. What is my ambition against that? What is my reputation in comparison to that? My men come first of all, George. And those men know it, too.
I know that they do.
You see, George, those men know that I would never let them down.
That goes without saying.
The life of one of those soldiers means more to me than all the stars and decorations and honors in France.
So, you think this attack is absolutely beyond the ability of your men at this time?
I didn't say that, George. Nothing is beyond those men once their fighting spirit is aroused.
But Paul, I don't want to push you into it if you think it's ill-advised.
Don't worry, George. You couldn't do that if you tried. Of course, artillery would make an enormous difference. What artillery support can you give me?
Well, I'll see.
What about replacements?
We'll see what we can do, but I feel sure that you can get along with what you have.
I just do it.
Oh, Paul, I knew that I was right to come to you. You are the man to take the anthill.
Now, as far as that star is concerned,
yeah, I can't deal with my decision. If anything, it would sway me the other way.
I realize that perfectly, Paul.
Now, when do you say you'll see this coming off?
No later than the day after tomorrow.
And that's from the film Paths of Glory with Kirk Douglas from World War I, poised to throw 8,000 men into an impossible situation. And this is what these people in the Pentagon think. This is the way they think. And if you know any young men that are thinking about jumping in there and becoming cannon fodder for the corporations, do everything you can to keep them out of it. I can remember the day I stood on the corner of Center Street and Lake Street in Warsaw, Indiana, waiting on a Greyhound bus to pick me up and take me to Camp Leonard Wood, Missouri for basic training. I thought I was really getting into something great. And I Fortunately, I got into an end of the military that I didn't have to see any action. But for those who do end up in the infantry and so forth, that end up seeing action, what a mess. What a mess. Now, of course, two-thirds of the people in the military are in support divisions, and they don't see action. Some of them have problems, even though they don't see regular in-the-trench actions. They see actions in other ways. But I see that the young ROTC people here in my local high school are being convinced to get in there and go by these bastards that come around, these military officers, to tell them what a wonderful, great career. And a lot of them will do it because it's the only way they think they can ever get a college education. So anyhow, they should be watching these kind of movies, Paths of Glory, All Quiet on the Western Front, Deer Hunter. People I really reserve a real resentment to is the parents that encourage their kids to go into the military. Possibly they were in the military, but they push their kids into it. And some kids are never going to listen anyhow. I don't think I would have listened at the time. But fortunately, I got a lot of good education. I got out. This is Insurgent Radio, Insurgent Radio Network. It's the 17th of May, 2014, and this is Saturn's Day. And we're all ready to go here. It's a little cool out, but not bad. Not bad. No rain, no snow. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And if you have not sent your donations in for the show for May, get them in. And we've got a lot of projects we're working on here. Or at least several. I see the Southern Poverty or Southern Millionaires Law Centers put out a big expose on Stormfront and how many people who were involved in Stormfront have gotten into problems and either dead or in prison. It's quite a long thing, and I'm not included. I'm thrilled about that because I'm not recommending anybody go on these kind of chat board situations to where you're, a lot of them put their pictures on there and everything else, and then later on if something happens, they got you. They got you. I get guys who email and get in touch with me all the time that want me to put them in contact with other people in other groups, and I won't do it. And a lot of them get pretty angry at me because I won't. They want to socialize with their brothers and sisters. And I said, no, this is not the time to be socializing with your brothers and sisters. Now's the time to cruise at periscope depth, keep your mouth shut, and be a lone wolf individual. And the time may come when groups are needed. But you could do no real, lasting, important good for the white race right now by joining any of these right-wing racial groups. There's nothing that they're going to be able to do to thwart in a major way what's happening to us. We're going to have to ride it out, batten down the hatches, dig deep foxholes and get in them. Our time will come, but they want to. In the meantime, they want to flush as many of you people out as they can. And the best way to do it is all this getting together with these organizations and getting membership cards and getting on chat boards and so forth. And, of course, they're there's a lot of people out there saying, well, that Metzger, he just, he don't know what he's talking about. He just jealous of this guy and that guy and this group and that group. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll save a few stamps for you when you write me from prison, boys, because I get a lot of prison mail, and it's guys who either didn't get the word or they did get the word and they didn't listen. And like you've heard me say a thousand times, my grandma used to say, Tommy, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel. And the whole white race is feeling now. Really beginning to feel it now. And not only from the Untermenschen, the blacks and so forth, and the crime that they commit, but also from Mother Nature itself, taking us to the woodshed due to all the crimes against the Mother Nature that we've committed, and how we've destroyed the land, cut down all the trees, spilled toxic oil all over the place. We've got radioactive material all over the place. And I was just reading yesterday about Ohio. It's all over Ohio. Other states are trucking it in and dumping it in Ohio. Not only that, but all those Somalians and so forth, the State Department's dumping into our states. But like Ohio seems to be getting a brunt, and there's other states too. Anyhow, our big website is resist.com. There's all kinds of survival information up there, all kinds of goodies, all kinds of DVDs and so forth. So let's dig around today and see what I can dig up that'll just piss you off. The drive for a so-called integration of the schools has become pathological to the point of insanity. And listening on the internet, like on C-SPAN and so forth, it's unbelievable that if there is one area where there's an all-white school, which is going to be very, very difficult to find, they're going crazy. We have to integrate. We have to integrate. We have to integrate. And to talk about Christ insanity, it's integration insanity. Unbelievable. I'm going to play a little bit about of this hysteria that's going on.
That's right. Yes.
Go ahead.
But like I said, where I lived, that's what I saw. I just it depends on a lot of times, like I said, where you live. Sometimes some people are just lucky to live in a diverse area with more resources, and if you don't, you have to really spend too much money to get diversity.
Gotcha. So economic issues, the similar thought of Adam Van Hoe on Facebook this morning, saying yes, that it's segregation, he says, based on economic status more than old-style racial segregation. You can make your thoughts on Facebook known at Facebook.com. On Twitter, BC Venice weighing in this morning, adding this. If tolerance was taught at home, integration would occur naturally. Some prefer to hate everything different from themselves. Let's hear from Patrick in New York. Hello, Patrick. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Go ahead.
I'm a public school teacher in New York City, and I've been greatly troubled by the segregation. I've taught in Chelsea, and I've also taught in the South Bronx. And the level of segregation by economic status is massive. How can we encourage diversity in even a city such as New York City that's incredibly diverse? You have schools that are 100% black and Latino. What can we do to encourage this? As a teacher, I'm also troubled by the racial demographics of the teaching profession. When you have teachers who don't look like the students they teach, what message does that send to our students? I'm troubled by that as well. I'll take my comments off the air.
If you look at that UCLA report that came out that was referred to by Abigail Thernstrom in her piece, it does include charts this morning, including most segregated states for black students, 2011 to 2012, the percentage of blacks in majority white schools. First in the rank is California. That's followed by Texas, New York, Maryland, Nevada, Illinois, and Connecticut. It goes on from there. It also gives the percentile of black students in 90 to 100% minority schools, New York leading that list. That's followed by Illinois, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Dennis, good morning from St. Louis, Missouri. You're on. Go ahead.
Yes, from a St. Louis context, Jim Crow schools are a reality of life in St. Louis. In the northern part of the city, schools are about 85-90% African American. We have a half a dozen school districts in the inner ring suburbs that range from 85% to 100%. It seems to me that a lot of this is a legacy of Jim Crow. It's not that it's practiced in the same way, but it's a product of discriminatory housing and redlining and all kinds of things. There was a recent article in the Post-Dispatch, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, that the particular communities where African Americans predominate have the greatest number of houses underwater. So you have an economic and a racial issue. Everybody knows that the schools are of lower quality than the majority white schools in the other suburbs and the other counties. So I would make an argument that this is a legacy of Jim Crow, and it is still with us. What we do about it, nobody is sure. I it's hard to reverse history.
As far as doing something about it, do you think that means there's a more of a role for the federal government in this case, or maybe?
I do. I think we've seen a number. Everybody has read article after article about how the federal government is stepping out. We're declaring a number of school districts unitary, which is kind of nonsense. The Supreme Court would not even allow Seattle and Louisville to voluntarily integrate the schools. So the government has stepped out of this, and this is a huge mistake. St. Louis area also had a voluntary desegregation program which allowed minority students from the city to go through suburban schools. That is still alive in a limited format that is eventually going to disappear. And this seemed to have a very positive impact on everybody, both minority and Caucasian kids. And there's a lot of evidence that minority kids benefit from being in middle class schools.
That's the thoughts of Dennis.
Well, you get the picture. It goes on and on and on, and you know there are just as many white people calling in crying about how horrible it is that there's any so-called segregation, which you know it's not segregation and of any real value, calling in crying and moaning, oh, it's terrible, there's too many white kids here together, we've got to mix them up. Yeah. Now, are you going to give the feds a little bit of a break here, Obama? Under Obama, the courts and so forth are backing away from more forced integration. I mean, you know, that's interesting. You would think under Obama administration, he'd be really pushing the agencies of government to force people together into schools, but not only the federal courts, but the office of the president have been backing away from forcing more integration in the schools. So something to think about there too. Well, boys and girls, we got another con man out here in Hoosier Land. Happens to be the governor of the state. Yeah, he started out. I think he started out as a radio talk show guy or a DJ, and got involved with the corporate media. And then somehow that catapulted him into politics. And now he's the governor, and now he's talking about running for president. But he's trying to pull a fast one here in Indiana. Has to do with affordable care, where he has to come off with the vision that he is he's a horrible, totally against the affordable care and all that kind of stuff, but yet he's trying to get the money and get around it. Indiana Governor Mike Pence, a Republican, whose name has recently been thrust into the 2016 presidential speculation, God, that's scary, unveiled a plan on Thursday to expand health care coverage to low-income people in Indiana. And I've heard an expose on this. I don't have it right in front of me. a couple of weeks ago, I got it over the internet that this is really, really another con job, and there's going to be a whole section of people in here in Indiana just get totally screwed on their health care while he pretends that he's taking care of everybody. Pence is opposed to the Affordable Care Act and has rejected the law's expansion of the federal Medicaid program. The coverage expansion in Indiana is a nod to Obamacare's Medicaid expansion, but Pence attempted to cast it in terms more palatable to his lackey conservatives. Conservatives. And a lot of them are just plain dumb conservatives. And these conservatives today don't remind me anything of conservatives back in the 60s and the 50s. Overall, he's attempting to walk a fine line, in other words, con them, between earning hundreds of millions of dollars in federal support and maintaining support from fellow conservatives and neocons. Pence said his plan, an upgraded version of the Healthy Indiana plan, will balance the two by requiring patients applying for coverage to take more personal responsibility for their insurance. In other words, they're going to have to pay for it. Pence's office said that the strategy, which would replace the traditional Medicaid program for people 19 to 64, believe me, you'd be better off staying with Medicaid with incomes up to 138% of the federal poverty level, would provide coverage to more than 350,000 Hoosiers. This would help alleviate what is known as the coverage gap in the state. Overall, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, in other words, another insurance company, medical outfit, more than 4.8 million Americans sit within the gap of having incomes too high to qualify for traditional Medicaid coverage, but too low to qualify for subsidies through the insurance plans under exchanges. Anyhow, it's another con job, boys and girls. And they're trying to pull it on my fellow Hoosiers. And they'll do it, too, because these people around here, they never saw a Republican idea they didn't like. Anyhow, the Governor Pence is going all around this thing, round and round and round the maypole, so that he can say when he runs for president, I didn't support Obama's insurance plan. No, no, no. I did it another way, and it worked wonderful. Oh, crap. And a note from one of our supporters, one of our lone wolves out there, more fraudulent Republican deception. In other words, this is Medicaid expansion that just isn't called Medicaid expansion. That simple deception will undoubtedly fool the brainless Republican masses into thinking that they are still standing by their principles when in fact they've caved in and fully complied with the Affordable Care Act. I can never have respect for such a moronic mob of misfits. I sent this news bulletin out to you by email, so you can read the whole thing if you would like, and if you can do it without gagging. Well, this is why the right wing doesn't seem to be able ever to win. This is coming to us from the Brits. Yeah, from Great Britain, that is sinking under the weight of millions of troglodytes and other fun creatures. Nigel Farage, launching a campaign poster last month, UKIP, some type of a nationalist group, has claimed that the UK has lost control of its borders. UKIP has come under the fire after it emerged that seven people were arrested on suspicion of immigration offenses in a raid on a restaurant owned by the party's small business spokesman. In June, the authorities raided a premises in Manchester set up by Amjad Bashir, who is standing or running in a campaign for the UKIP in this month's European elections. His family has denied any wrongdoing. UKIP said that the restaurant was appealing against likely fines, saying visas and passports may have been forged. UKIP, which is aiming at top polls in the European elections on the 22nd of May, has long criticized what it calls the UK's open borders immigration policy. The party, which wants to leave the European Union, has called for a crackdown on illegal immigration and strict curbs on a number of legal migrants or invaders allowed in the UK every year. The Times, which first reported the story, said that 3 days after the raid, Mr. Bashir resigned as a director of the company, which owns Zook Tea Bar and Grill in Manchester, England, and a sister branch in Bradford. However, it said he remains a shareholder and has continued to take a role in running the restaurant, co-founded with his two sons, Tayyub and Mud Asser. That's a hell of a choice of a name. M-U-D-A-S-S-A-R. Mud Asser. Mr. Bashir, 61, is second on the UKIP's list of candidates for the Yorkshire and the Humber region in this month's European elections, giving him a realistic chance of being elected. Oh, man, I'll tell you. On his website, Mr. Bashir said he joined, and undoubtedly this is a WOG, a non-white, he joined the UKIP because other parties were neglecting the needs of the small to medium-sized businesses, as well as their failure to tackle mass invasion by WOGs. Yeah. In other words, I'm in here now. I don't want anybody else coming in here. The Home Office confirmed 7 people were arrested for a variety of immigration invasion offenses, and a civil penalty notice was served after the raid. Tayyub Bashir told the Times that they were appealing against the notice and had not yet paid a fine. He said that the restaurant conducted immigration checks on all employees and vigorously denied any wrongdoing. Liberal Democrat MEP for Yorkshire and Humber, Edward McMillan Scott, told the Times, forget the obvious hypocrisy, employing illegal invader immigrants to is exploit even against the law, unquote. But Mr. Faraz said he was not going to prejudge the outcome of the legal process. Quote, his son is a director and runs that business, and they had an argument and a row with the immigration people, which they are appealing, unquote, he told the BBC this week in the news. UKIP later insisted that Mr. Bashir has resigned as a director before the raid took place, and the restaurant carried out rigorous passport and visa checks before taking on new staff. It said 3 of the 7 workers who were arrested were subsequently found to be entitled to work. Of the remaining 4, the party said the company was appealing against fines in 2 cases where it believed the workers' paperwork was valid and believed there were mitigating circumstances in the other 2 cases. It says 2 workers temporarily hired to fill for unexpected vacancies on a Saturday night who were not known by Mr. Bashir may have provided forged documents. Yeah, right. That's the hypocrisy of the right wing. You know, over and over and over we see the hypocrisy of the right wing. Dump the right. Well, just when you thought you were safe, I see Godzilla's back in the movies. Oh, those were pretty chintzy movies the Japs put out those Godzilla movies. But now they've got much better special effects, and it's probably going to be quite shocking. So I don't know whether I'd run out there and give all that money to the Jews to see it or not. Being a senior, I get a cut rate. But I don't think I need to see Godzilla again. Well, we got a member of the House of Representatives that was interviewed the other day, Steve Daines, Republican of Montana, the front runner in Montana's open 2014 Senate race, expressed support for teaching creationism in the public schools. I think that's tied to those people that believe that the earth is only... I talked to a lady the other day, a Christian, and I was sort of trying to get a few points into her, and she said, oh yeah, this earth's only 10,000 years old. Well, I said, that's strange, because I think the pyramids are probably nearly 10,000 years old. She said, well, I have my faith, and I have my little book here. In an interview that aired November 2nd, 2012, Sally Malk, news director for Montana Public Radio, asked Daines, who was then running for Montana's lone House seat, whether public schools should teach creationism. Daines responded, quote, what the schools should teach is, as it relates to biology and science, is that they have, there's evolution theory and there's creation theory. And so forth. I think we should teach students to think critically and teach students that there are evolutionary theories, there's intelligent design theories, and allow the students to make up their minds, but I think those kinds of decisions should be decided at the local school board level. He added, personally, I'd like to teach my kids both sides of the equation there and let them come up with their own conclusion. Well, if you studied, and I studied creationism way back when they were just starting to play around with it, hell, I think it was clear back in the 60s, and found it, it definitely wanting. Some of their assumptions are wacko. Well, let's delve down into the world of the chicken. While working on a story about extreme dog breeding, our reporter was told over and over again to check out how farm animals, especially chickens, are bred. In a few short weeks, she discovered yet another example of the human capacity for shaping animals to our own dubious ends. For the first time in recent memory, Americans are consuming more chicken per person than beef. The typical adult now chomps around 60 pounds a year of the birds, and the chart below makes the trend clear. If you're among those visiting the Colonel or other poultry purveyors, your reasons probably have to do with either the chicken's reputation as a healthier source of protein or its lower cost. Indeed, chicken is lower in fat than beef, making it potentially less of a contributor to cardiovascular disease, and some studies have associated chicken with a lower risk of colon cancer. But not all chickens are created equal or are equally healthy. As Who, What, Why learned from an investigation of how chickens are raised in the United States, due to a combination of selective breeding and rearing practices, chickens today grow at an absurdly unnatural pace, 3 to 6 times faster than they did 60 years ago. The chickens of today are almost Frankenbirds. One farmer put it bluntly, quote, we've successfully bred most chickens out of the chicken. To understand how much chickens have changed, it's instructive to look back at the early 1900s. In 1925, it took 16 weeks to raise a chicken to 2.5 pounds. Today, chickens weigh double that after just 6 weeks. According to a study from the University of Arkansas, if humans grew a similar rate, after 2 months, a 6.6 pound newborn baby would weigh 660 pounds. Quote, chickens are suffering as a result of genetic breeding, said Bruce G. Frederick, Senior Policy Director of Farm Sanctuary, a farm animal protection organization with sanctuaries in New York and California. They are sent to slaughter when they're about 6 weeks old, chirping like babies. They have massive upper bodies and are being genetically bred to grow six times faster. The reason they're bred with top-heavy bodies is because the breast meat is in more demand than the dark meat. Well, I like the dark meat myself. Chickens are much fatter and have to be filled with antibiotics in order to be kept alive today, said Frederick. It's true, agreed Suzanne McMillan, Senior Director of ASPCA Farm Animal Welfare. Her report on the plight of factory farm chickens explains, quote, because of their immense size, many birds cannot support their own weight, are unable to stand or walk, and they can die of dehydration or hunger just inches from food and water. These outsized chickens are often found toppled over, lying on their waste, and open sores and infections. These unhealthy conditions have potentially to increase the risk of foodborne illnesses like salmonella, McMillan explained. In fact, in a 2010 Consumer Report analysis of fresh whole chickens purchased at stores nationwide found that two-thirds harbored salmonella and a campylobacter, the leading bacterial causes of foodborne diseases. According to a report from the Natural Resource Defense Council, 80% of all antibiotics sold in the United States are used on livestock. This has raised alarm in numerous quarters, as the American Medical Association noted in a letter to a New York congressman, Louise Slaughter, quote, antibiotics are one of the most useful and important medical advances in recent history. Their effectiveness, however, is being compromised by bacterial resistance, arising part from excessive use of antibiotics in animal agriculture. The AMA is opposed to the use of antimicrobials at non-therapeutic levels in agriculture or as pesticides or growth promoters. Wow. Dozens of national and regional health organizations have joined the AMA in the chorus. They all concluded that antibiotic-resistant infections lead to longer illnesses, more and longer hospitalizations, greater side effects from antibiotics, and death when treatment fails. As the Center for Disease Control says in a recent report, quote, up to half of the antibiotic used in humans and much of the antibiotic used in animals is unnecessary and inappropriate and makes everyone less safe. Genetics have played a large part in the industrialization of the food animal production, says Will Harris, president of the White Oak Pastures in Georgia, a fourth-generation farmer or cattleman who tends to the same land that his great-grandfather settled in 1866. After graduating from the University of Georgia's School of Agriculture in 1876, Harris returned to the farm to work alongside his father. In keeping with the standard methods of the day, they used pesticides, herbicides, hormones, and antibiotics. They also fed their flock a high-carbohydrate diet, corn and soy. Wow. Tools did a fantastic job of taking the cost out of the system, said Harris. But by the mid-1990s, I became disenchanted with the excesses these industrialized methods. In 1995, I made the decision to return to the farming methods of my great-grandfather, 130 years before. His free-range chickens are not cooped up indoors or kept in artificially lit barns, are not fed antibiotics or corn or soy, and live longer before going to slaughter. In natural conditions, the animal's health is better, which dramatically lowers the need to use antibiotics. Since Harris implements these changes, he has attracted global attention to his leadership in humane animal husbandry and environmental sustainability. Anyhow, that's as far as I'm going to go today on that. You get the idea that much of this stuff you're getting from the Colonel and these fast food restaurants especially is bad stuff. I think I'm going to get my walk out and do a hell of a lot more vegetables. If you haven't cooked with a wok, you ought to try it sometime, because you can throw all kinds of vegetables or anything else. You could even throw, of course, some meat in there too, and it makes great dish, makes great dishes. So anyhow, beware of these Franken chickens.
I understand why farmers don't want to talk, because the company can do what it wants to do as far as pay goes, since they control everything. But it's just gotten to the point that it's not right what's going on, and I've just made up my mind I'm going to say what I have to say. I understand why others don't want to do it. And I'm just to the point that it doesn't matter anymore. Something has to be said.
Taking the reporter through her.
It is nasty in here. There's dust flying everywhere. There's feces everywhere. This isn't farming. This is just mass production, like an assembly line in a factory. When they grow from a chick, and in 7 weeks you've got a 5.5-pound chicken, their bones and their internal organs can't keep up with the rapid growth. A lot of these chickens here, they can take a few steps and then they plop down. It's because they can't keep up with all the weight that they're carrying.
You're showing these chickens dying and so fat they're laying on their back dying. She's taking about a dozen big old chickens out to throw away now. Oh, a lot more than that. Pretty bad.
That's normal. There's antibiotics that's put into the feed, and of course that passes through the chicken. The bacteria builds up a resistance, so antibiotics aren't working anymore. I have become allergic to all antibiotics and can't take them. When it's dark inside the houses, the chickens lay down. It's less resistance when they're being caught. Traditionally, it's been African-American men. Now, we're seeing more and more Latino catchers, undocumented workers, and from their point of view, they don't have any rights, and they're just not going to complain. You know, the companies like these kind of workers. It doesn't matter if the chickens get sick. All of the chickens will go to the plant for processing.
Oh boy, this is sickening. It is truly sickening what they've turned the farms into.
The companies keep the farmers under their thumb because of the debt that the farmers have. To build one poultry house is anywhere from $280,000 to $300,000 per house. And once you make your initial investment, the companies constantly come back with demands of upgrades for new equipment, and the grower has no choice. They have to do it, or you're threatened with loss of a contract. This is how they keep the farmers under control. It's how they keep them spending money, going to the bank and borrowing more money, and the debt just keeps building. To have no say in your business, and it's degrading. It's like being a slave to the company.
Well, anyhow, there's a video on the tube about this. I'll try to send it along to you. It's pretty sickening. Well. Swimming pools have become a threat to black kids. A new study shows that black kids are still drowning at an alarming high rate when compared to other children. Researchers say this means that black youth aren't learning to swim and is having disastrous effects. Researchers found that black children aged 5 to 19 died at a rate 5 times that of white kids. Wow. Well, I think it's pretty well been common knowledge that swimming among the black race has not been their highest advantage there. I know in the Marine Corps out at Camp Pendleton, California, in Force Recon Division, at least during the time I lived out there, they would not put a black running point for Force Recon Marines because they said that they were scared of snakes and all kinds of things that are in the water. And I think later on they did, but they said blacks in point positions in Force Recon slowed them down a lot. Well, Jesse Jackson Jr. is going to be a little less rich. I think he's still doing time, but anyhow, Jesse Jackson Jr. will refinance his house to pay off the debt he owes the feds as a result of his political corruption conviction. According to a recent court filing, Jackson is refinancing his home and will wire $550,000 to the U.S. Marshals on or before June 1st. Well, there you go. Well, here's a little historical tidbit. Archaeologists with the United States Marines have identified wreckage that they believe to be from a Confederate ship named the Planter. What makes the find a unique significance is that the ship was used as a slave escape. Robert Small seized the ship during the Civil War in 1862 and guided it into Union territory, freeing 15 slaves in the process, including 7 crewmen, 5 women, 3 children. He turned control of the ship over to the Union. The vessel was used then as a gunboat for the Union Navy, and in 1863, Smalls was named the captain of the ship and served in that capacity till 1866. He was the first black man to command a United States vessel. As compensation for seizing the ship from the Confederacy and bringing it under Union control, the United States Senate and the House of Representatives voted in May 1862 to award Smalls and his crew with half of the value of the ship and the cargo it was carrying. Well, you notice how they're playing down this MERS disease that's coming out of the Middle East. Very interesting. They don't show a picture of this patient that was in Indiana in the hospital. 2 health workers at a hospital in Orlando, Florida, who were exposed to a patient with Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, have begun showing flu-like symptoms, and one of the two has been hospitalized. Officials at Dr. P. Phillips Hospital said on Tuesday the 2 healthcare workers were exposed, let's see here, to the patient, the second confirmed case of MERS on U.S. soil, in the emergency department before it became clear that he might be infected with the virus, which is often deadly. Now, I haven't heard anything on the regular news about this. Maybe you have. I haven't. The second healthcare worker is being isolated in his home and watched for signs of infection. Hospital and local health officials said at a press conference that the MERS patient, also a healthcare worker, had made a visit last week to the Orlando Regional Medical Center to accompany another person who was having a medical procedure. The MERS patient was symptomatic at the time and did not seek treatment. So they're popping up in another area now. So what aren't they telling us? What aren't they telling us? They're awfully quiet about this deadly disease. I see black comedian Paul Mooney allegedly has cancer. It's interesting because I off the wall came in contact with Paul Mooney, not directly, but ended up with a conversation over the phone, as I recall, that through another party he was toying with the idea of putting a comedy show together, and he wanted me to be on it with him. That would have been a riot. He's a funny guy, and I've never seen a guy say nigger more than Paul Mooney. Anyhow, they said he was on his last legs, but Mooney seems to be saying that he's not quite headed to the afterlife yet. But this isn't conflicted by those who've been to his shows and noticed that he doesn't have the same energy and vitality he once had. Well, maybe it's 20 years later. I mean, of course he may not have the vitality he once did. Anyhow, Paul Mooney, he's a funny guy. If you haven't heard any of his stuff, I've got one of his CDs around here. It's funnier now. I used to play it once in a while on the show. I'll have to see if I can find it. Yeah. He's the one who had that bit about white people. They're crazy, man. White people crazy. They'll go anywhere. They climb the mountain. They'll go to the moon. They'll go to the bottom of the ocean. They'll do all this stuff. And black guys, we ain't doing that shit. Well, I see the Ku Klux Klan is doing something here in Indiana. I haven't seen any of them around, but flyers placed on vehicles around Richmond early Thursday morning were mostly rain-soaked and illegible while residents removed them as they began their day. But the message on the flyers was certainly not hard to grasp. Loyal White Knights, KKK Rally, Realm of Indiana, Saturday, May 17th, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. That's today. Wow, I missed it. Or I am missing it. The flyers also included a phone number and a web address for the Loyal White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, which lists a P.O. box in Pelham, North Carolina. A call to the number provided a message that included racial slurs and hate speech and a pronouncement that the group's next rally will be conducted May 17 in Centerville, Indiana. I'm going to have to get the map out and find where that's at. I think Centerville's probably way down south, but I don't know. You know, for having been born in this state, there's still many, 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 many towns I've never been in. No details were provided beyond that, but the message is loud and clear on the group's website and in the sign-off of the voice message, which stated, "If you're white and proud, join the crowd." James Moore, who identified himself as the Grand Dragon of Virginia during a phone call to the Palladium Item newspaper on Friday morning, said the group is headed to private property in Centerville for an annual Indiana rally. Gee, they didn't even invite me. Quote, "We try to go to every state once a year," said Moore, who added that the media was not welcome at the event. Well, that's smart. We have a pretty active chapter there in Centerville, so we are headed up there, unquote. Moore claims Centerville Clavering, a local unit of the KKK, has about 150 members. Your nose is going to grow long, man. Yeah, right. If you got 15 members of that town, you'd be lucky. Quote, we have about 50 new Indiana members to swear in, unquote, Moore said. And members will be there from all over the country. Yeah, well, I know how that stuff goes. How we, the Klan always used to exaggerate all over the place. We got thousands of members. They're everywhere. Moore said the group distributed flyers in Richmond this week because they're trying to let people know the KKK is in the area. We're trying to let people know that everything will be okay. The Klan is here. You're all right. You're safe. Several Richmond residents received the flyers overnight Wednesday into Thursday, with most being posted on car windows in various sections of the city. Nick McKinley by Bigock, whatever in the hell that is, said he went to his car Thursday morning on the city's north side and found a flyer, man. At first I thought it was just a joke, but I called the number and I couldn't believe it, McKinley Bijock said. The first thing they say is the dumb racial slur award of this week goes to I am half black and I just about puked when I heard it. Oh boy. So, that's in Centerville, Indiana. Let me check that out. Well, I'm afraid it's too late for me to get to Centerville, Indiana for the big Klan rally. That's over almost on the Ohio line, and it's about straight east of Indianapolis. That's a long way from here, so unless I can get a helicopter ride, I'm not going to make it. Well, here's another guy that got 24 months for starting a little, he took a little 3-foot cross and lit it up. He gets 24 months for playing games. Let's see what the story's all about here. Just a second.
A former Ku Klux Klan leader has been sentenced to prison for a 2009 cross burning in Ozark. 28-year-old Stephen Dinkle will spend 2 years in prison for his role. Dinkle pleaded guilty to hate crime and obstruction of justice charges in February. Court documents show Dinkle and Thomas Smith burned a cross outside an African-American neighborhood in Ozark in May of 2009. Smith pleaded guilty to conspiracy to violate housing rights in December. His sentencing is set for August 19th.
Well, what are you going to do? I read about that when it originally happened. It was a little 3-foot cross. The guy's going to do 2 years for it. But he probably wasn't too much of a criminal before he goes in, but he'll, by the time he gets out, 2 years in prison, he'll learn every rotten thing in the book. So maybe they're in the business of creating criminals. That should have been a suspended sentence or probation, if anything else. But he may come out a real hardcore racist and go on to bigger things and be a little smarter this time.
Good evening, I'm Amy Wagner. We first told you about this last night. Lincoln Heights Elementary on lockdown for the remainder of the school year in the wake of what school officials are calling, quote, a significant amount of random violence within that village. District leaders say it's forced them to eliminate outdoor recess and extracurriculars, reduce staff travel, and increase police presence there. But while the school board says it's taking action for the safety of the students, several parents claim racism may be behind the move. Fox 19's Lisa Hudson is live outside Lincoln Heights Elementary. Lisa, discussion there between parents and the school board got pretty heated today, right?
It did, Amy. Within just a few 24 hours, a meeting that was supposed to be between two parents and a school board member turned into more than 50 parents and several school officials. And those parents say when it comes to closing or the possibility of closing this elementary school, they believe it has nothing to do with violence.
It takes one bullet for a student getting off the bus, in the recess, outside, and we could not look ourselves in the mirror and saying that we could not proactively have planned to ensure that each and every child was safe.
too much violence. That is why Princeton school officials say they are locking down Lincoln Heights Elementary for the remainder of the year. A stray bullet striking a school bus last December is just one example, they say, of an unpredictable pattern of violence.
SWAT was actually in our parking lot.
But village officials told a different story.
From January of this year to May of this year, 2014, we've had one student-related incident.
Angry residents took turns telling the board a lockdown is one step towards closing the school for good.
Make me think that the majority of the people that want to close the school down, they're racist.
I care about the fact that the fools is up there shooting on the hill. But don't act like it's everybody. Don't act like we don't care. Don't act like we don't want our children educated, because we do.
We are not here to say that we want to close down Lincoln Heights Elementary.
Okay, let's take calm respect. And be respectful.
Know, if it continues like this, we'll just end it right here.
And that it's an economic reason. I'm not saying it's racism. Princeton has advocated that they have to cut so many $1 million. Who gets cut first? Okay, us.
Now, since December, school officials say they have had to put Lincoln Heights Elementary School on lockdown at least five times due to violence in the village. Monday, they plan to make a decision on whether or not to close this school for the remainder of this school year. That decision will be made at the Board of Education meeting at 6 o'clock in Sharonville. That meeting will also be open to public comment. Live from Lincoln Heights, Lisa Hudson, Fox 19, Balance News.
Now, that was a grade school in Ohio, a grade school, and it's almost all black. Bullet holes in the windows of the school buses. Grade school. Going to close the school down maybe for the whole year. Wow. You know, I broke that news for you about this political party over there in Britain, I guess. It's somehow connected with the EU or whatever. But anyhow, in Britain, and how they were pushing anti-immigration programs, but they found some of their members were employing illegal aliens, and they got a guy on the hot seat representing the party. Watch how these conservatives will dance around and clown around and try to get out of the situation, even to the point of calling their members idiots. You know, just a minute.
Watching it, I think we've turned on the cameras at lbc.co.uk. If you want to head over there, you'll see a very welcome but unexpected guest in the studio this morning. I don't know if you were listening to Nigel Farage's phone-in with Nick Ferrari last week. If you were, you'll have heard this.
And I just wondered how it feels to be keep getting called a racist.
Yeah, I mean, this is the political class clubbing together, using their mates in the media, and doing anything they can to stop the UKIP charge. And because we've got a few idiots in our party, as by the way does every other party, you know, somebody in some part of England says something stupid or offensive on Twitter at midnight, and this is held up as being representative of the view of the party.
Nigel Farage is with me now. Shall we? Let's start with today's Good idiots, on. Shall we? And then move on to what you mean by the political class and their friends in the media. We've got John Lyndon Sullivan, I think, overnight. It's emerged, he tweeted, he's a councillor of yours in Gloucestershire. I rather often wonder if we shot one pufter, whether the next 99 would decide on balance that they weren't after all. We might then conclude that it's not a matter of genetics, but rather more a matter of education. Admittedly, of fairly small fry in the UKIP machine, not a description you could apply to your small business spokesman who, it turned out this morning, has employed seven illegal immigrants in the last year.
Well, they're two different things, aren't they? I mean, firstly...
Well, I don't know. Are they both idiots?
Firstly, people are saying silly things. Yeah, of course, we've had more of it than we would like. But hey, hang on a second. What's going on in the other parties? I mean, we just got the news.
I'll ask them when they're here, Nigel, but I'm talking about your party.
That's the point.
Today.
Nobody ever does ask them, and that's the point I'm making, is I'm perfectly happy for us to have a debate about our idiots and our people who are offensive.
So what happens to John Lyndon Sullivan, then, for that tweet?
He's not a councillor, is he? He's a council candidate.
I think he's already in the council.
Is he? I don't know. I haven't heard of his name.
Well, he's got your party's name on his ballot paper.
I haven't heard of... Well, there's a big difference between being on the ballot paper and being an elected councillor. You know, one comes after the other.
He is an elected...
He
is an elected councillor.
Is he? Fine. I didn't know that. We have had people...
So what happens to him now?
He will face a disciplinary charge of whether he's brought the party into disrepute.
That was on the 17th of February.
Was it? I don't know.
Okay. What about the small business spokesman who employs seven illegal immigrants?
Well, I think be a little bit careful on that story. You know, he founded a business, which he's no longer a director of. His sons run it. They have got a big row going on.
He resigned, to be clear, as a director of the company 3 days after the immigration raid.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
He's resigned as a director.
After the immigration
raid. He's not running, but he wasn't responsible for the day-to-day running of it. However, I've spoken to him this morning. He says they made checks, and they are in dispute with the immigration authorities, and they've gone to appeal. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But that doesn't make him an idiot, you know.
What does it make him?
Well, we don't know. You know, let's find out what happens here. Maybe somebody in his business has made a mistake. I do not believe for a moment he would have done that, I do not believe for a moment he would have done that, knowing that he was running as a candidate for us in the European elections. My argument, James, is this. Wherever we have found people who have had extreme, racist, unpleasant views, we've unceremoniously got rid of them. Furthermore, I've tried to protect the party by making absolutely clear that anybody that had previously been a member of the BNP or organisations like that cannot even join as a member. And to hold up the views of a handful of people as being representative of UKIP, frankly, isn't the truth.
Well, OK, what about your associations with the BNP? If we go back to 1997 when you had lunch with a chap called Devin, who, as you know, is responsible for writing an astonishing... I mean, his expose of Jews in the media was called Mind Benders. You were photographed with him. It was reported at the time that you're a man who often used words such as nignog and the N-word that Jeremy Clarkson recently got into trouble for in the pub after committee meetings. And a month after that lunch, Devin wrote an article for the far-right journal Spearhead suggesting that the BNP and UKIP get into bed together. How does something like that happen?
Because Mr. Devin was brought into the centre of UKIP by the chap at the time who was the leader, and turned out to be something very different. And I've never seen him since that day.
Well, no, the lunch you had with him was after he was expelled.
Yeah, I wanted to find out why.
Find out why what?
Why somebody like him, who had been held up to me as a great academic, he was going to make a very big difference.
But you'd seen what he'd written.
With a book...
The Grand Plan, The Origins of Non-White Immigration.
I wanted to find out what on earth had made somebody change their point of view. Nothing more than that. I haven't spoken to him since. As for the allegations, you know, as to what I said in the pub after committee meetings, you will not find a single other member of that committee who makes that allegation.
Alan Sked has, the founder of
UKIP. Yes, I know. Well,
you just said I wouldn't find anyone else. The founder of your party has made the same allegation.
He was the person that made the allegation. Nobody else has made the allegation. Mr. Devin didn't make the allegation. Dr. Sked made the allegation. So, and you know, in politics... You know, all sorts of disappointments happen to people, and they throw mud.
Yeah, of course. What about the mud that's been thrown about the far-right parties with which you sit in Europe? The Danish People's Party, the True Finns Party, the Dutch SGP, and perhaps most interestingly, the Lega Nord. I think you co-chair, do you, that group with Francesco Speroni? He described Anders Breivik as someone whose ideas are in defence of Western civilisation.
No, he didn't, actually. He didn't. One of his members did, and we kicked him out of the group.
No, you're thinking of Maria Borghesio, who went further and said in a radio interview that Breivik had some excellent ideas. But Speroni himself, who is your co-chair of this group, said that Breivik's ideas are in defence of Western civilisation.
If you were to come and meet him in Italy, or Poland, or Slovakia, and listen to the political discourse, you would realise how incredibly different it is to what we would consider to be acceptable in this country. What I have done in the European Parliament is to try and draw a line and to say we will not sit with people who we believe to be on the extremes. We will sit with people who we believe to have a reasonable, balanced point of view. Now, let's be honest, we have had a problem in this group with one or two members of the Northern League.
Why don't you just leave it?
Well, we could leave it, and in fact we made sure Mr. Borghesio left our group. But equally, I mean, you know, the Conservative Party had the bloke who celebrated the SS invasion of the Baltic states, and we have said, and I'm sure you know this...
But why don't you leave it?
We have said that we will not sit, you know, with the Front National and parties like the Austria Freedom Party. We've made that perfectly clear. You know, we are not a party that wants to be linked to the far right. But I promise you, if you look at the associations everybody has to form in the European Parliament, a degree of compromise is needed.
Well, this is what moves us on to the question about the political class that you referred to in your description of my fears about some of the positions that UKIP seems to represent. Because all of your defence thus far has been, well, we're no different from any other political party, and yet your whole unique selling point for many of of your fans and supporters is that you are different. Well, so yeah, I think the phrase you used was that members of the political class and their friends in the media. So let's run through that. You currently write columns for The Express and The Independent every week.
Yeah.
You've been on Question Time, I think, in recent months more often than anyone except David Dimbleby. The Private Eye has reported that some of your medical bills are paid by one of the owners.
Hang on, I'm not having this.
Why not?
I'm not having libel thrown at me on, live on the radio.
My
medical bills have not been paid by anybody, all right? Other than partly by myself, more than I could afford, and the rest by an insurer. All right,
okay. Legal action against Private Eye?
I may do. I'm at the moment, it might surprise you, I'm busy running an election campaign, so I'll think about that afterwards.
Okay, too busy to know who's standing on the council in Gloucestershire under your own banner.
I lead a political party. Okay.
Well, you see why the right wing, I don't care whether they're in Britain or whether in the United States or where they're at with these conservative right wingers, they never can win because they spend 99% of their time backing down. And immediately somebody calls somebody a racist and they're all out to get him. Well, I'm throwing him out of the party. I'm throwing him out of the party. The night before they could have been out drinking. Parties, groups like that can never win anything. They're all alike. They're useless. The way you handle these people is the way I've handled them on TV and radio for years. Hell yes, I'm a racist. If you don't like it, that's your problem, you know. If I don't like the Jews, that's your problem, you know. Just tell them straight out. They want to put guys like this on radio and TV, backing down all over the place, and the moderator looks like a great hero to the opposition. So anyhow, I'll try to send you the whole thing, but that's your anti-immigration party there, one of the leaders of your anti-immigration party in jolly old England. 14-5. I'll be back on Moon's Day. Don't go anywhere. If I didn't offend you today, I'll be back Monday to do some more offending.
You know what we need? New zodiac signs. The old ones, I don't know, they depict an obsolete world. The archer, the water bearer, and talk about obsolete, the virgin. What we need are modern zodiac signs that represent today's reality. The serial rapist, the lone gunman, the suicide bomber, the paranoid schizophrenic, the transsexual crackhead, the money launderer, the disgruntled postal worker, the diseased homeless veteran, the South American drug lord, the third generation welfare recipient, the human immunodeficiency virus, and the personal trainer. And in case you're one of those people who doesn't relate well to the real world, here's a nice, safe zodiac for you. The soccer mom, the sensitive male, the special needs child, the role model, the overachiever, the jogger, the little leaguer, the recycler, the anchor person, the codependent, the Domino's delivery boy, and the recovering shopaholic.